being in the male-dominated industry, it's just hard to picture yourself in these different roles that you don't see other women or non-binary people already like being a part of. And it also just comes with a lot of insecurities because working with men or more masculine people, it's just a different style and perspective. I found that that has been the case, and it can sometimes be a little tricky to communicate in a way that is good for both parties involved. But I've been really enjoying getting to know a lot of non-binary and female musicians and hearing about their experiences in the music industry and reminding myself that I don't have to serve this masculine confidence that I think that I need to serve when I'm producing or if I were to produce someone else's work, and reminding myself that approaching it in a way that's more true to my femininity is something that's not a bad thing and I should lean into.
That was Miss Grit, and this is Sheeros, a podcast with a mission to turn up the volume of women's voices in music across genres and generations. I'm Carmel Holt, and what you're about to hear is a previously aired interview from my syndicated public radio show, Sheeros Radio. Sheeros is a deep dive into the experiences and perspectives of women and gender expansive folks in a still overwhelmingly male-dominated music industry. It's a space where we discuss challenges and triumphs, how far we've come and how far we still have to go. Telling our stories is the first step to making music better for everyone. According to Women's Audio Mission, fewer than 5% of the people creating the sounds, music, and media in the daily soundtrack of our lives are women or gender-expansive individuals. And when you look at the percentage of female record producers, that number is even smaller. In the latest study of the music industry issued by USC Annenberg Inclusion Initiative, only 2.8% of producers were women. So it's super exciting to bring you a conversation this week with someone who studied music technology at NYU and at just 25 is a brilliant producer and engineer of their own work, and in my humble opinion, is about to have their biggest year yet. Margaret Sohn, aka Miss Grit, studied guitar from age 6 and started writing and producing their own songs in college. Their self-produced debut EP, Talk Talk, arrived in 2019, the effect of its unexpected success reflected in the aptly titled Imposter EP in 2021. Which also saw Margaret grappling with their sense of displacement as a Korean American growing up in the Midwest. And now, the polymath Margaret Sohn has returned with a visionary, self-engineered and produced full-length debut called Follow the Cyborg. We celebrate its release as they join us now as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Margaret Sohn, aka Miss Grit, welcome to Sheeros. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is an exciting moment. Release week for Follow the Cyborg, your full-length debut album. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, I guess. It still hasn't hit me really. I wrote these songs a while ago. It's always a weird process, the release process. So,
well, should we dive in? You want to tell us the story of these songs, how they came to be? You said you wrote them a while ago. Yeah. Is this a pandemic record? I guess most things are right now, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I started writing this like 2019, so just before, and then I finished it like 2021, early 2021. I was just really, really inspired by the idea of the cyborg, the myth of the cyborg, watching these movies growing up, Ex Machina, Her, Ghost in the Shell, Serial Experiments Lane, the anime, and reading texts from Gia Tolentino's Trick Mirror, Donna Haraway's A Cyborg Manifesto. I just really connected with the character of the cyborg, and writing music through prompts and metaphors is something that's really helpful for me, and expressing myself through that medium is a really good tool for me, I think, just because the lyric process is really scary for me because it's a very vulnerable moment. And so having something to channel and not necessarily use it as a shield, but more as like a sword to wield and carve out this musical experience and make this full album.
I'm so glad that you clarified that, because that's exactly what I was thinking when you were first talking about it. I was like, well, that's a good method of self-protection when you're doing a practice as vulnerable as writing songs, which are most often, whether we want them to or not, somehow filtered through our own experiences.
Totally. Yeah, I've been trying to be more gentle with myself recently and finding all these ways that I protect myself from the outside world and not necessarily being down on myself for it, but using those kinds of tools of protection to my advantage and accepting it really for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I could go deep here and say that the cyborg and adapting that character to speak through, that kind of creates a layer of protection between you and the fans and you in the world putting this music out. And in addition to maybe wanting to shield yourself from vulnerability, that also is a very natural impulse for women and non-binary people.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think it really comes from things that you're taught when you're little and how your environment can shape you. Being born into these identities and having the world already kind of make up their mind about what that means for you as a person and what your personality should then entail. It's something that I'm like constantly thinking about, like, how did I get here? How did my personality find its way to where it is now? And the process of dissecting all these things, the patriarchy or capitalism or the gender binary, all these different social norms or, yeah, things that you don't question when you're little. You're just given it as a label, as an identity, and kind of just have to go with it as you're growing up and learning about these things. And I think the time of questioning is a time to like really grow as a person and find exactly what it is that is at your core and makes you you, I guess.
And no place like New York City to do that for you.
Yeah, really.
Margaret Soane, aka Miss Grit, our guest on Shiro's. The new album is Follow the Cyborg. Let's play a clip of a song here. Where do you want to start today?
Should we start with the title track?
Hell yeah. Talk to us about the song and where this fell in the timeline of building the album.
This song was near the end of the full album, and I think it is the song that I hold closest to my heart on this entire project. Lyrically, it's about approaching identity in a limitless way, specifically gender. And sonically, I was trying to give myself permission to dive more fully into the electronic world, and I wrote a lot of this record using virtual instruments, like on my computer, opposed to like analog synthesizers, which I was using on previous EPs. And so allowing myself to use the computer more as a tool to create a more limitless environment or a soundscape was really pivotal in making this record come to fruition, I think.
And what about lyrically? Where does this fall in terms of telling the story?
Yeah, I think this song is the turning point from the first half of the record to the second half. It's where that questioning comes into the story and where the character starts to develop a more personal way of identifying and take more of their own liberty and choosing their identity, I think. And so the song is the turning point from being the creation made by the creator to becoming a character of its own, I think.
I wake up pretending, then I wake up again, leave my mouth wide open, then let her say the rest, 'cause I was born to.
Title track to the full-length debut by Miss Grit. Margaret Soane is here with us on Shiro's Radio. I'm Carmel Holt. Now, immediately following the English version of Follow the Cyborg, we have the Korean version.
Yeah. This song, I wanted to treat more of like a documentation of where I was at the point in my life when I was writing this album. And it was a way for me to express my own Korean-American identity, being biracial, not growing up knowing the Korean language, and being at a point in my life where I'm starting to take Korean lessons and kind of indulge more in the culture, as opposed to growing up and having people tell me how it is to be an Asian American. I think I really just wanted to take the opportunity to try exploring it for myself and document it and record it without any judgment coming from myself or the outside world, and take this little snapshot of where I was at that point in my life.
Would you be willing to share with us what you've discovered thus far taking that journey?
Yeah, I guess one of the big takeaways from making this record, making that song specifically, is that being a mixed person, I'm always going to have a complicated relationship with my racial identity. And it has a lot to do with the context of the world that I'm in and the time. And because of that, it's going to be a forever changing identity. And it's not something that is to be figured out and solidified, but rather allowing myself to change and explore that change and embracing it more in a fluid way rather than having it be a singular label.
Yeah, labels are tricky. I've been exploring this and trying to learn and unlearn myself a lot about this, especially in this moment that we're in where gender fluidity is becoming more and more common and accepted in our society, which is great. And at the same time, I want to continue to hold space for women and non-binary people and keep that signifier and that signal alive that, like, hey, come on in, it's safe here. Because because patriarchy, because capitalism, because all the things that you just mentioned, and add to that being somebody that's biracial, the layers keep building and building and building of places that it's possible that we could get cornered in ways that aren't super comfortable. And so I'm curious about that part of your experience too, as an artist out in the world, promoting your art, you know, interacting with the press, what navigating that has been like for you, and whether you do still feel like there's a need for us to create these safe spaces or have these signifiers and identifiers, you know, like I'm biracial in front of, I'm an artist, I'm a musician, I'm a guitarist.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the funny thing with labels, especially non-binary labels, is that we're asking to be identified in a more fluid way, but then also putting a specific label on it. But I think that that's the reality of language, in that, like, we always have to be putting words to new meanings and new understandings of things. And we don't have to be so concrete in the way that we describe things. And there is the ability to change and have our language change. And I think creating safe spaces where people feel like they're allowed to change and change in front of people is something that's really important too. And talking with my friend about, like, interviews recently, I was telling her how sometimes I feel really nervous about interviews because I feel like I have to, like, stay true to my word and I can't change my mind after that and, like, go back on it. I have to be, like, confident in the words that I'm saying, but I'm really trying to give myself a bit of grace in that sense. And everyone's changing every second of life, so it only makes sense that I'm not going to be the person that I was, like, 2 seconds ago. So I've just got to allow myself to change in front of people and not be scared of that vulnerable aspect. Yeah.
And kudos to you for being brave enough to do that. And it's always a head scratcher to me when popular culture doesn't want artists to change.
Yeah.
You know, I think of one of your favorite musicians, St. Vincent, you know, how her path has evolved and where she has wanted to push her music to, and people's resistance to that. Like, she wants to be pop. And I think about what you said a little while ago about pushing yourself on this album to use non-analog music making as a tool, which distances yourself from the guitar, which is, I think, your first instrument, right?
Yeah, my first instrument. Yeah, I think something that we all instinctually do is when we find something that we love or really, like, hold close to our hearts, we want to hold on to it forever and never let go of it. And so I find sometimes I can do this in relationships where I'm scared of, like, where they're going to change to, and always trying to just, like, hold on to every moment so tightly. But I think that's not necessarily respecting the beauty of life or of relationships or of music or self-expression. And I think appreciating it for what it is in the moment or what it was, and allowing it to move forward into something new is more respectful of self-expression and the beauty of change. Yeah.
It occurs to me too that by stretching yourself in this new way sonically, that you're also in step with the concept of this record. Was it a conscious choice on your part to echo that journey of your character as well in your sonic choices?
Honestly, I wasn't consciously doing it in the moment, but I think subconsciously I was definitely inspired by the concept of the album that I was studying and creating from these texts and movies. And yeah, I was just thinking a lot about my approach to music and where the tensions lie in my creative process. And a lot of the tensions that came up for me were during the actual recording process, where I felt limited by what was at my hands in terms of instruments or recording equipment. Being small artists, it's financially really difficult to actually record professionally and be in a studio and use analog gear. And it just turns into a huge limitation. And so I think I was definitely inspired subconsciously by this idea of accepting more of like a limitless way of thinking. Yeah.
Do you want to point us to a song on the album that might connect with that?
I think Lane would be a big one that I really didn't tense up when I was writing it. And I just let it all flow out of me and pound on the keyboard weird random notes that didn't really make sense together, but it just felt right.
That's track 4, Lane, and in parentheses, Phone Clone, from the new Miss Grit album, Follow the Cyborg. And Margaret Sohn is our guest on She Rose. My name is Carmel Holt. All these thoughts are coming to me, thinking about the cyborg and the binary. And when I think about robots that people are making, that they're still hypersexualizing women when they're making cyborgs and robots. I mean, sex robots is a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think about the movies that you quoted. I love that shit, by the way. So the females are always so hypersexualized. They've got the teeny tiny waists, really tight clothes and big boobs. And it's fascinating.
Yeah. That's what I loved about Ex Machina, because this is a major spoiler if you haven't seen it, but she being the main character, Ava, the cyborg, she leans into that, into her sexuality, into the romantic interest between her and her creator, or Caleb, who is the other programmer. But she takes that and uses it as a tool to find her freedom, really, because she understands that that's what she was intended for, and that that's ultimately the creator's weakness. And I just thought that that was like a really beautiful and powerful way of addressing the pattern of creating female presenting like cyborgs or artificial intelligence. Yeah.
So did that play a role at all, that particular angle, in any of the songwriting for this album?
Yeah, definitely on the track The End. It's a very like revenge filled song, and one that leans into the submissiveness expected of the female cyborg. And yeah, I just kind of wanted to make it like a fucked up song a bit.
for those of us that don't know you, and this is our first time meeting each other, I would love to get to know your backstory a little bit prior to coming to New York City and going to NYU. How did you and music meet up in your life?
So I guess pretty early, my parents aren't musicians really. I think they would claim to be. They love to sing and stuff, but they just are really big music lovers. And, you know, my dad would play Talking Heads, Led Zeppelin. My mom would play The Cure, Fiona Apple around the house. And so music was just a really beautiful source of entertainment in our family from a young age. And me and my sisters all loved to like sing together around the piano. And my dad actually went to Guitar Center one year and bought us a microphone and recording software so that we could like sing into the microphone and record ourselves all together. So that was like one of my earliest experiences in recording technology and stuff. And
that's amazing. Yeah. How old were you?
I was maybe like 7 or something. It was pretty young, but I was just starting to play guitar at that time too. I started playing guitar when I was 6, and it was a fun time for my musical journey. There was a lot to explore and not a whole lot of pressure at that time. So it was a fun time.
So when did the music making start to become something that you were creating?
It was honestly pretty late, like in college, I feel like. Throughout high school, I would write music for certain assignments just because I thought that was an easy way for me to get a good grade. But it wasn't until college that I started the moniker Miss Grit and really just went in with the intention of writing music that I could be proud of or that I personally loved, I think. It was always a really scary thing for me to test my songwriting skills because it's obviously like something that I've loved my whole life. And so I was putting a lot of pressure on having to be a good songwriter. But my sophomore year of college, I was in my dorm room at NYU alone, like while people were away for holiday break, and something really triggered that motivation where I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna shut myself in this room for like 2 weeks and write music for the first time that I would be okay with sharing with people. And it was a really fun experience. Yeah.
Okay. So can you take us to that moment that you shared it for the first time? Do you remember what that was?
Yeah. At the time, I was working as a studio technician at NYU for the music technology floor.
That was your major, right? Was music technology?
Yeah, so music technology. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was working as a studio technician and I was doing my rounds around the studios and making sure all the mixers were all set up right and computers. And I remember it was my first single release of Talk Talk. And I decided that I would work with PR for that release. And I was lucky enough to like have the extra cash that I had saved up from doing a couple like soul-sucking modeling gigs that were not fun. And I also got like a friend discount from this really amazing PR agency. And just seeing that article written about me was like really crazy. I was just in the studios doing my job and then seeing someone who I've never met before, never seen, writing an article about me was really, it was really crazy. I felt a lot of happiness because there was so much worry going into it and leading up to it and a lot of self-doubt, but having that was a really validating moment.
Your second EP was called Imposter. I know that you were struggling a little bit with imposter syndrome, which, you know, not to box us in or anything, but that's a very common thing that we go through. How did you push through that?
Yeah, I think my motivation to get over that came from a place of anger, honestly. Being in the music technology department, being surrounded by a lot of men, white men, I was really aware that like the things I was being taught were taught to me from a biased position, or it was taught from like a singular perspective. And so that, of course, isn't helpful for everyone when you're learning. And I think something that's really helped me is I have like a really deep love for visually cute things, kawaii things. And I put a lot of effort into my home studio and making it a really like cute and comfortable space for me that sparks joy, you know? So I think leaning into that and reframing the way I visually see technology and these instruments has been really helpful in finding my own voice through that, I guess, or finding my own way of learning these different techniques, just because it kind of reminds me that it's not going to look like the ways that I was taught. And so, yeah, I guess that's just my helpful trick, is visually making all these synths and hardware technology things that look really scary on the outside to be a bit cuter and put like little stickers on them and stuff.
Which is so funny when you think about the visuals of this new record, you're like vomiting chords. But that's amazing and a really good tip for any aspiring woman or non-binary person that wants to get into production. And may there be more. I mean, yeah. I'm so glad that you touched on that, because it's crazy to me. I mean, listeners, just so you know, our friend Margaret here is only 23, I want to say, right? Okay, you're 25, right? So you're 25. So this was not that long ago, though. When you were in the music technology program and you were surrounded by mostly dudes.
Yeah, totally.
Am I right?
Yeah, and I was just 22 by the time I was writing this record. So, yeah.
Right. So we've still got a little ways to go when it comes to changing that. And it's interesting to think about technology even as a gendered thing. Like, I wonder, you know, because you were saying visually how you're making your studio cute. I'm like, what if we were to work on that too? Like, boosting the femme a little bit in technology and making it a little bit more welcoming.
I'm always like thinking that, like, if a femme were to design the, I mean, I'm sure like femmes are part of the team, but like if it was more femme dominated, maybe like a lot of these things would look a lot prettier and not look so ugly, like all this software. And
It's such a good point. Do you think that you would ever want to produce for others or engineer for others?
I mean, I would love to. I think I'm still fighting that like imposter syndrome in production and the confidence to comfort people in the studio and be really on top of everything. It comes with a certain amount of confidence that unfortunately a lot of femmes don't have, I think.
Why do you think that is?
I think just being, in the male dominated industry, it's just hard to picture yourself in these different roles that you don't see other women or non-binary people already like being a part of. And so the visualization of it is just really hard to get past, I think. And it also just comes with a lot of, insecurities, because working with other men or more masculine people, it's just a different style and perspective, I think. I mean, it changes with each personality, but I found that that has been the case, and it can sometimes be a little tricky to like match the language or like communicate in a way that is good for both parties involved. But I've been really enjoying getting to know a lot of non-binary and female musicians and hearing about their experiences in the music industry and reminding myself that I don't have to serve this masculine confidence that I think that I need to serve when I'm producing, or if I were to produce someone else's work, and reminding myself that approaching it in a way that's more true to my femininity is something that's not a bad thing and I should lean into.
Yeah, quite the opposite. And it breaks my heart when I hear artists say, gosh, I mean, I would love to work with a woman as a producer or as a mix engineer, but there just aren't any of them. I'm like, that's not true. Yeah. It's just that they're not getting hired and they're not on our radar, you know? And I don't know why it disappoints me sometimes when, not that this is a judgment on anyone, but I find it disappointing just sort of in a global way to hear that, or to see femme artists and non-binary folks hiring bands and crews that are still majority masc, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Because I do think that it makes a difference, those choices that we make, even though they're hard ones to make, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that it makes a difference?
I feel like it makes a huge difference, like just the communication styles, and I think collaboration and how it's viewed right now is like viewed from a very like masculine perspective, I think. And just the idea that if you're going to collaborate, you need to like be confident and know exactly what you want to do, I guess. And I don't know, just have this way of like directing the collaboration experience, the way we think of it right now, is definitely shaped by the patriarchy. And I think adding more feminine voices or non-binary voices into these crews or engineers or producers is going to evolve the way that we view collaboration, maybe, or the way we communicate through collaboration. And yeah, I just remember like being in music tech and we were expected to get internships and what it was expected of us as interns, you know, to be like flies on the wall and not speak up. And the engineer is the boss. And just like, yeah, the power dynamic is something that's really nailed into you, I think, when you're learning and trying to get these experiences under your belt. So it contributes to how you see yourself fit in the power chain, I guess. Yeah.
Which is crazy to hear you say. You even had the benefit of a formal education to think about all of the artists that are out there that want to have that language, that want to be able to express themselves when it comes to the recording process or when they get out into a live setting and they just get fucking steamrolled at like left and right, you know? And you just wonder what music would sound like if there was a more welcoming, open, collaborative, equal playing field out there, you know?
Without someone's voice being louder than the others. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think about that a lot too in terms of socioeconomics and class and how accessibility of gear and recording equipment and all these different things that are blocked by finances, it all really shapes the way we create music and the genres that come out from different people. Like, I think of Bjork and how she writes these extremely beautiful orchestra pieces and performs live with the full orchestra and is just like totally limitless in that way because she has access to it. And what if that tool was given to someone just starting out? How would that shape the way that they create and how would that dictate their creative expression or genre of music that they decide to create? Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, like we were talking about before, how sometimes limitations also bears incredibly beautiful fruit too. I mean, you think about like, you know, rap and hip hop, it's got both sides.
Yeah, totally. And I think, there is something about like being limited that bears a certain like thing. And yeah, vice versa. It, like being limitless can also produce another thing. And I guess that, yeah, it's different, but also I think people should have that choice to limit themselves in the ways that they want and stuff. Yeah.
Miss Grit is here with us on She Rose Radio, Margaret Sohn. Her debut album, the full length debut, is Follow the Cyborg. I have a couple of tracks highlighted here, some favorites.
Oh, yeah?
I love the opening track, Perfect Blue.
I actually haven't talked about Perfect Blue a whole lot so far.
Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so Perfect Blue is an anime movie by a director called Satoshi Kon. He's one of my favorite directors, and that movie in particular, while it doesn't really have a narrative of a cyborg, it's still related in the idea of multiple identities and finding your core self, I think. And Perfect Blue is the first song on the album. And I kind of wanted it to be a powerful track, but also a submitting track in a way where the lyric is, I'll be what you asked, I'll be the perfect blue. And I think I wanted to write that from a position of the cyborg talking to the creator and being like, oh, if this is what you want from me, then I'll be it and I'll be even more than what you are expecting of me and take that power of the position that I'm given and find my own pathway through it. The track also features strings from some really good friends and drums from Stella Mozgawa from Warpaint, who is so amazing to collaborate with. She just like nailed it automatically and did a really great job on drums.
What can you tell us about making that connection? How did you meet and working with her?
Yeah, we were connected through our publishers and they just thought it would be a really good match. I was really interested in working with someone in the like rhythmic department just because it's not necessarily my strong suit. So like I felt like it would be cool to hear a perspective of like someone who fully is in that rhythmic world. And we met over Zoom. It was my first collaborative session I've ever done, so I was super scared, but Stella was really, really cool. And we talked for a bit, and then I sent her the tracks. And I was like, I think you should just go wild on the song and like do what you think would be best. Cause I just really trust her taste and stuff. And it was awesome.
Perfect Blue, that starts off this incredible new album by Miss Grit, Follow the Cyborg. Margaret Sohn is our guest on She Rose Radio. I'm Carmel Holt. I'm a real credits nerd. But part of that is related to what we were discussing before about diversifying our teams and making sure that we are intentional about those choices. Yeah. And we were just talking about working with Stella Mazgawa. And you also had the album mastered by Sarah Register, whose name has been coming up more and more. Thank goodness.
She's amazing.
May there be more mixes and masters by women and femme folks. Yes.
Totally.
I was curious to talk to you about some of your sheroes. Mm. Who has been inspiring to you along the way?
The major ones are Bjork and St. Vincent. The way that they approach music and expressing themselves through music has just been really inspirational, and fighting the like boundaries that I'm constantly trying to put myself within and what society is putting all of us within. But they really just don't care about those boundaries and are just like, I'm just going to do what I want. And that's something that's really inspirational to me. I've also been really inspired by Yeji. She makes really amazing electronic music, and she does it with such a softness, but also a real badassness that I really relate to. A lot of her graphics, she leans into that cuteness that I really, really love and relate to in the way that I build my music environments. And yeah, she's awesome.
And I was wondering about connecting with other Asian American artists too, like Karen Oh. I had such a great conversation with her, and you know, she's just so supportive, and how excited she was to meet Michelle Zahner and to just know that there are more and more Asian American women in music, because there were none when she was coming up. I mean, forget about femme artists because she was on her own. So I was curious about those kinds of connections for you too.
Yeah. I mean, thank God for Karen Oh, because growing up, she was the only musician that I could look to. I mean, I'm sure there was more out there, but just like on my radar, she was the only Asian American femme artist that I was listening to. The others were just white dudes. And I just, I just love her so much. And I was in a cover band in high school, and we would do Yeah Yeah Yeahs covers, and having the opportunity to even channel her power and like voice was just really a fun experience. So having those people to look up to, like Michelle Zahner too, has been a really integral part of creating my music, I think, and just finding the confidence to like express myself in that way. Yeah.
Hopefully you aren't finding that people are lumping you in with them just because they're Asian Americans too. People can be so fucking lazy about that. You know, they're like, oh, they're just like Japanese breakfast. It's like, no.
Yeah, definitely get that a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. How do you handle that?
I get Mitski a lot too, which is a huge compliment. All these are huge compliments, even though I'm not sure how accurate they are. I do like try to give people some grace, I guess. It comes from a lack of exposure to more diverse artists. And in that way, it is their responsibility. They really should be exposing themselves to more different artists so that they don't see us in such a singular way. And it can be frustrating, but it makes me feel the connection towards Japanese Breakfast, Mitski, Karen Oh, even stronger, because I'm sure they all also are having this experience in a way. Yeah, it's
sure
nice to like feel that connection in that way. Yeah.
There's this fine line between proudly wearing our identities and being tokenized and, you know, wanting to be included on the festival lineup, but then realizing like, oh, but wait, there's still like we already got one of those. So
totally.
Yeah.
It's kind of a mind fuck. Cause like I was going through like a point where I really just wanted to be a guitarist for other bands. That was during the college years. And I found myself getting in these situations a lot where I really felt like I was being tokenized for like my image, and people were just wanting to hire me for that purpose, and I was just being used as a prop. And it's really confusing because you don't know if it's your talent or your image or what you are to these people. And it's not something that you can really know for a fact unless someone admits it outright, but it's confusing.
It is confusing. Yeah. I know. And I don't really have any answers. Yeah. I wish I did as to how we can fix that. But Margaret, yes. My dear Margaret, I bestow upon you the Shiro's magic wand. And with it, you have the power to change anything. And I know that the list is probably long, but whatever comes to your mind, what would you love to change for women and non-binary folks in music?
So much. So much.
Wave of the wand. It's so easy.
I think something that I would like to see shift is the importance that is placed, I guess, on our identity. And while I think it's extremely important to, you know, ponder that and talk about it, like I've loved our conversation today and being able to talk with similar people like that share commonalities with me, I think there's a point in the grand conversation of the music industry where we need to get past that and look at people more complexly, if that's a word. There's just that extra barrier that needs to get broken down, and we need to get to a point where it's not just like, I'm the Asian American non-binary artist, and it's more just like, I'm Miss Grit and this is my art. Yeah.
I'm Miss Grit. This is my art. Margaret, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Choose a track for us, if you would, to take us out today.
Let's do this thinking. This is about choosing yourself over being the crutch for someone else to rely on.
I've never felt
with thanks once again to Margaret Sohn. Miss Grit, thank you for being with us on Shiro's.
Thank you so much.
Many thanks once again to Margaret Sohn, aka Miss Grit, for being with us. The full-length debut, Follow the Cyborg, is available now on Mute Records. Shiro's is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Shiro's is also a nationally syndicated radio show. You can visit shirosradio.com to find out more and support our work with Patreon or merch from the Shiro Shop. Keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio. And please consider leaving us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps us grow and bring you more Shiro's. We're headed to On Air Fest this weekend, an amazing podcast festival in Brooklyn. For more on Air Fest, check out onairfest.com. We'll be there doing a live podcast taping with Valerie June. We'll have that for you on the next episode of Shiro's. Until then, I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.